Well, in the last few weeks, I've had the privilege of being part of something our denomination is doing. There's a guy named Matt Canlis who wrote a little book called Backyard Pilgrim. And it's been an interesting journey, a daily reading. And then we're supposed to take a walk in the neighborhood. It's been a little challenging for those of us who live in Edmonton and Winnipeg and places like that. A little different for California. And one of the days especially that caught my attention and just the difference of all that, a day we were supposed to take a walk and find a garden. Well, there haven't been many gardens blooming in Edmonton. And it said this, doesn't have to be a big garden, but don't pass by it too quickly and don't just stop to smell the flowers. Well, haven't been many flowers to smell. Throw away a piece of trash, pull a weed, hug a tree, pick some cherries, harvest a potato. Well, it was a good reminder that this was not written in this part of the world, or if it was, certainly wasn't written at this time of year. But then it said, what can a garden teach you about your relationship with God? And I thought, you know what? There might be a lesson even here. I was on University Ave, and there was a community garden and was there. And even as the snow is covered and everything is dormant, maybe that's the lesson. That garden will spring. It will. But right now it's dormant. Right now, there's a decrease in life. Right now, some things have had to die, some old foliage. Sometimes there cannot be new life without death. Maybe that's the lesson that we need to take, certainly at this time of year. It is Lent. Now, I grew up in a church, a very godly church, but a church that didn't really practice Lent. And I have a feeling for many of us who don't come from a liturgical tradition, Lent isn't a huge part of our celebration of Easter. But this year as a church, we want to take some time and think about this thing called Lent. Even the book we're studying has a lot of history on it, if you want to read that. There's a lot of uncertainty around where it all started. They know that back in the year 325, so we're going back a bit. This council came together, the Council of Nicaea, and talked about this 40 days of preparation. They're not even sure if it was just for people getting baptized or not, but certainly a time of examination and looking at ourselves and preparation for life, be it of baptism or certainly of Easter. The new life of resurrection. Lent itself, the word comes from an old English word that means spring. And they think that word came from an old Saxon or German word that meant longer days. That makes sense, right? Spring is about the life of longer days. But Lent is coming at this time to remind us that that has come out of a shortening of days. And to have the new light and the new life, there's some things that we have to acknowledge and let go of and let die and give up to die and surrender. This is the book that we're going to allow to lead us. Now, it's often interesting. We say, well, I'm going to study a book, but this is ultimately the book, okay? What Alicia Britt Chole is doing here is taking us on the journey of Christ toward the cross. And in so many ways, that's what Lent is. If we go to Luke chapter 9, verse 51, there's this shift, and it kind of happens in all of the Gospels. But here it is. As the time approached for Jesus to be taken up to heaven, okay, all the life of heaven and all the life made available to people, He resolutely set out for Jerusalem. And what was Jerusalem? The cross. That before resurrection and the life of heaven made available the kingdom, Jesus resolutely set out for the cross. The spring of Lent comes in embracing the decrease that Lent brings. And that is very much what Alicia Britt Chol is leading us toward. Maybe you in the sanctuary, many of you online have purchased the book. You started on Wednesday with the readings. Reminder, there aren't readings for Sundays. And you're starting to see what she's talking about when it comes to decrease so that we can have life. She starts a book by saying, how many Easters came and went when she was looking towards something to happen on that resurrection Sunday? Wow, life, vitality. And there was a day of eating some turkey and some big songs at church. But the depth of transformation, the vitality of life that Jesus rose for wasn't always her experience. And the question that she raises in the book is it possible but that our lack of experience of life and the life of heaven and the life of the kingdom of God, might it be connected to our lack of resolutely setting out with Jesus toward the cross and toward what we need to let go of? Now, she says that, and maybe this is your experience of Lent, for a lot of people, you give up something. And unfortunately, in North America, we tend to give up what for a lot of the world is a luxury. I'll give up chocolate, designer coffee, candy. I'll give up media. Well, at least I'll shorten it to 2 hours a day. And I'm not, and she's not saying that's a bad thing. If done right, it's a giving up to create space and time to think of God. But I know as I've given up coffee a couple of years, a lot of time I don't think about that. And it just becomes a headache for a week. And what she's saying is even if that's your celebration of Lent, to give something up, there needs to be space for God. But she talks about giving up other things. The fasts that are in this book, and there's a different one each day, are more of giving up those obstacles, those things that need to die. I love a quote here that she has early in the book. She says this, Lent is less about well-mannered denials. Okay, that's giving up at the surface where we don't let it hit our hearts. Lent is less about that and more about thinning our lives in order to thicken our communion with God. Amen. Amen. Isn't that what we want? Somehow the vitality and the life of the resurrection of Christ taken over? But even that garden I saw, if the old foliage hadn't been taken out or worked under, it just gets in the way. Often death needs to precede life. So if you're following in 40 days of increase and decrease, and again, you can order the ebook if you want to jump in, you're not too late. She does a few things. Every day, there's something of the story of Jesus moving toward the cross. Okay? And with that, some kind of a fast for that day. I'm going to talk about a few of them as I go through the sermon. That's one part. Another part is a reading in the book of John. And our pastoral devotional guide that we make available are following the readings in John. They don't necessarily connect with the part of the life of Christ she's talking about. They're kind of two things, all right? And the sermons are going to be out of the book of John. So those are the two things. And then there's some history on Lent. We invite you to jump in and together walk through this and talk about it. And I'll be saying more through the message. But this week, these readings in John start at John chapter 12 and go through John 21. So we're in John 12, and I think this is a great passage to kick us off into decrease that there might be increase, and to me, a real theme verse here. So what we're going to look at today, John 12, verse 24. Very truly I tell you, these are the words of Jesus. Very truly I tell you, unless a kernel of wheat falls to the ground and dies, it remains only a single seed. But if it dies, it produces many seeds. Interesting. Unless there is death, there cannot be life. How do we prepare for the life of Easter? How do we prepare for God's transformation? How do we, in the midst of a world that we're just, pandemic and politics and division, even in the church, all these opinions, how do we prepare for new life to come out of this? Why not, instead of all of that, here's some time to look at our heart and say, God, what do you need to do in me? So that I look at all this more and more through your eyes and see your life. We're not so focused on all that isn't, because we're maybe giving up in our lives what doesn't need to be. That your life can change us. How do we do that? Well, I want to look at a principle today in this verse, John 12, 25, and then we're going to look at its outworking. All right? So first, the principle. How do we prepare for the new life that Easter's all about? How can we see the new life of the resurrection create more life in our lives, transformation, more like Jesus, more fruit of His Spirit, more because of the fruit of His Spirit, others being drawn, impacted for Him? How do we prepare for that kind of life? And the principle of John 12 is simple. For new life to emerge, some old ways need to die. For the new life of Christ to emerge and continually emerge and grow, the old ways that are not of Christ need to die. Let's look at John 12, 25 in its context. And it's kind of a strange conversation. You ever had one of those conversations that just seems to be going off the rails? Someone's not following. Hey, how's the weather? Yeah, the Oilers game was great last night. You're going, what? Well, it's kind of like that in John 12. Let's pick it up in verse 20. And what's just happened, Jesus has entered Jerusalem. This is Palm Sunday, as the king, and people are following. And as he's come as king, for those there, they were Jewish people, understanding the coming of a Jewish Messiah, a Jewish king, to give Jewish independence from Rome and a whole new kingdom under their God. Okay, in that context. Now, there were some Greeks, non-Jews, among those who went up to worship at the festival. These are non-Jewish people somehow drawn to the God the Jews worship, who we know is the true God. They came to Philip. He's one of the disciples, and he has the most Greek name. Okay, so they went to him, and who was from Bethsaida in Galilee, with a request. Sir, they said, we'd like to see Jesus. I think what they're saying is, we want a part of this kingdom that's about to come. We're not Jewish, but we'd kind of like a part of it. Philip went to tell Andrew. Andrew and Philip in turn told Jesus. They said, I don't know, we don't know. I guess we'll take them to Jesus. Jesus, there's these guys that aren't Jewish who want to see you. We think they want part of your kingdom. Now, it's like they'd ask Jesus, how's the weather? And he responds talking about the Oilers. Because the next verse, Jesus replied, the hour has come for the Son of Man to be glorified. Very truly, I tell you, unless a kernel of wheat falls to the ground and dies, it remains only a single seed. But if it dies, it produces many seeds. Now, is Jesus hard of hearing? Has Jesus been asked one thing and he's totally responding to a different thing? No. This is profound. What Jesus is actually doing is giving the deep answer. In essence, you've got some non-Jews representing a non-Jewish world, the rest of the world, coming to Jesus and say, we want a part of the life you have to offer. And Jesus says, now is the hour I'm about to be glorified. I'm about to go to the cross and die. But you know what? That has to happen for you non-Jews, and in fact, you Jews as well, to be part of the life that I have to offer, because I have to fall into the ground. Later, he says, I'm going to be lifted up. I'm going to be crucified. He's saying in John 12, I'm going to be crucified. My life is going to be given so that out of my life being given, not only will Jews have a place in the kingdom, and not only you three Greeks, but all Greeks and Romans who would turn to me, and everyone in the rest of the world, regardless of their ethnic background, will have a chance to turn to me, so that all people from all over the world, many seeds, can come to have this life. But first I have to die to take care of the real need. See, we have such a small view. My time of being in a band was very short. I grew up in a small town, too small to have a band, but I get to college and I'd played a little bit of trumpet. So they, you know, made me third trumpet. And there I am in third trumpet, and I got my little line of music that I'm trying to master. My focus is on this little line, but not the composer. He had written all those lines into a big, big song. And the director of the band looks at all of that, because it's not about one little line. He's interested in everyone having a part in this grand music, this grand life. But Jesus had to die. Why? Because we all went off and played our own music. See, the story of the Bible begins with God creating us good in a good world, where there was life. And he said, all you got to do is just follow me. We said, is there another line of music I can follow? Because I think I can make a better song. And that's the essence of sin. Thinking, I know life better than God. And that cut us off from God by our own choice. We've got this God in his perfection and us in our rebellion and our sin. And the story of the Bible is we're the ones who deserve this eternal separation and death. But Jesus has come in our place to represent us, to say, now I am going to, in your place, fall into the ground in death, that many seeds, much life, can be offered to the world. It's amazing. Jesus died not so that a Jewish nation could have a political king, but that the world could once again have its rightful creator king and the life that he came to offer. So what does this have to do with us? Well, right after this verse, what does Jesus say? And John wants us to hear. Verse 26, whoever serves me must follow me. Wherever I am, my servant will also be. Oh, let's go to 25. Anyone who loves their life will lose it. Well, anyone who hates their life in this world will keep it for eternal life. You get that? In essence, Jesus is saying the way into this life that I died that you could have is that you die to yourself and receive it. We ultimately have to come to a place where we say, instead of loving my music and my way, I will surrender that. Receive God's way. That's how we walk into this new life. We don't work for it. We don't earn it. We just simply say, God, I have messed up. I am sorry. Thank you that, God, you came in Jesus. You died on a cross. You rose to give new life. I need it. I need you to forgive me. Forgive me. Please forgive me. And once again, lead my life. That's how we enter that life. And I hope today that you have taken that step, prayed that prayer out of the honesty of your heart. But here's where it gets interesting around Lent and preparing for more life. We need to continue. It talks about hating their life. We need to continue to recognize the destruction of that which is not of God and give it up and die to it that his life might emerge. And Lent is simply a time in the midst of our journey to stop and say, what has to die so that Christ's life can come? What has to die that Christ's life might come? What's interesting, prior to this statement of the wheat falling in the ground and growing, Jesus tells three stories. And in each story, there's a group of people or a person that reflects something that has to die. All right? So let's take a little bit of time and say, what are some examples? What are the things that need to die so that the life of Christ can emerge? First thing that needs to die is this: empty religious ritual. Empty religious ritual has to die so that true relationship can emerge. A little Lenten humor here. Came across a story. There's a pastor from a liturgical tradition, so he's wearing a collar, walking down the street. It's night. It's getting dark, and a thief comes along, a robber, pulls out a gun and says, "Give me what you have." And just as the pastor is putting his hand in his pocket, the robber notices the collar. He says, "Oh no, they're a priest. Sorry. And he's about to walk away, and the priest is so kind of dumbfounded, he's found a chocolate bar in his pocket, and he pulls it out and he says, well, thanks for not doing anything. Here's a chocolate bar. And the robber says, "Nope, giving up chocolate for Lent." That might be a little empty. I want to suggest out of John 11, we see the same thing in people who are looked at as very religious. John 11 is a story of Jesus raising Lazarus from the dead. You want to talk about a miracle? I think a lot of people say, if I just saw a miracle, I believe. Well, there's so many stories in the Bible where that's not true. And here's one. Lazarus is dead. 4 days in the tomb. Okay? He's dead. But verse 43. Jesus has prayed and called him out. 43, John 11, when he had said this, Jesus called in a loud voice, "Lazarus, come out." The dead man came out, his hands and feet wrapped with strips of linen and a cloth around his face. Jesus said, "Take off the grave clothes and let him go." Wow. And the people are amazed. And some run to tell their religious leaders, because isn't this what their religious leaders have been looking forward to? They've been searching the scriptures. They've been pulling out the rules and adding their own rules to make sure they were living right for the coming of the one they were waiting for who could give life. They kept the fasts. They gave what they were supposed to give. They went to all the right services. You would think they would go, "He raised the dead. It must be him." But they had their own ideas in the midst of the ritual. They had their own power that they didn't want shaken up. Verse 7, then the chief priests and Pharisees called a meeting of the Sanhedrin. "What are we accomplishing?" they asked. "Here's this man performing many signs. He raised the dead. If we let him go on like this, everyone will believe him, and then the Romans will come and take away both our temple and our nation. They're going to mess with our religion. We better keep the God that we're really waiting for in the midst of our religion out of it, because it's going to mess with us." Do you see that? And this, verse 53. "So from that day, they plotted to take his life." Wow. Can our practice of faith get in the way of our faith and the true God of our faith? It did here. So we give up the practices? No. We just go back to why and the roots and honesty. Let me give you, if you're in this Lent journey, and I encourage you to be, the very first fast on day one was practice giving up Lent as a project. So often our practices are checkbox. I did this. Look, God. And he's saying, but you didn't give me your heart. I encourage you to jump in to this journey, or maybe even it's through the readings in John, or pick up the book. Here's a few ideas. First of all, give it time. Our lives are so fast, and I think even in COVID, we fill it with other things, so this time with God, check. I gave it the 15 minutes, I was able to read it, and I didn't think, God, what do you want to say to me? The other thing is enter into conversation. Nothing like taking it from intentions in the head to actually living this out when we get with others and we start talking about it. I know a number of our small groups are having conversations around the book. A lot of you don't have that opportunity. That's why I'm hosting an opportunity. 4:00 today. All right? If you want in, go to the website, the banner. There's kind of two different ones that go on and off. Go to the 40-day one. That'll take you to the link. All right? If you went in and you can't find it, email me, lyle@mckernanbaptist.ca. Love to have you part of that conversation at 4:00. We're just going to say, how's this first week been? Or what are you thinking? And we'll just take 1 hour and 1 hour only. Talk about this. But the last thing here is just pray. God, speak to my heart. Take it beyond activity. Now, I recognize in 40 days, some is going to be more impactful than others. That's God. But on those impactful days, those fasts that touch your heart, stop there. Think about it. Say, okay, who do I need to talk to? How do I need to pray? What's going on? God, I don't want this to be empty. And ultimately, again, why? So that resurrection life overcomes and overtakes me in new ways. It's not going to happen through empty religion. We got to give up empty religion. Then we got to give up lack of authenticity. Lack of authenticity. Yesterday was an interesting fast. Those of us in that were supposed to fast artificial light. Okay, keep the lights off. It gets kind of dark at 6:30. I actually shaved by candlelight. I've never done that before. So I'll wear my mask. None of you, it's okay. Interesting how quickly we can be in the dark, but just quickly turn on a light so the dark goes away. We can ask for a photographer, can you make the light adjusted so the best comes out? And if it doesn't, can you touch it up after? Just change the lighting artificially to reveal to hide what's really there. And in that chapter, Chol talked about John the Baptist, how he had a time in jail, and he's wondering, Jesus, are you really the one? And rather than putting artificial light and pretending he didn't have struggles and questions, he sent someone to Jesus and said, I want real light. I don't want to mask behind artificial pretense that I'm not okay. All right? The second story I want to quickly look at, John 12, the beginning. Jesus enters the home, Mary and Martha, Lazarus. And this Mary comes and anoints his feet with this very expensive perfume. An extreme act of devotion. And she doesn't even know it, but she's actually using something that would prepare him for burial later on. But who responds to it in the middle? Verse 4, one of the disciples, Judas Iscariot, who was later to betray him, he already had issues. He already, like John the Baptist earlier, was struggling, except he was hiding it. Is this really the Messiah? Why wasn't this perfume sold and the money given to the poor? It's worth a year's wages. He did this. He did not say this because he cared about the poor, but because he was a thief. As keeper of the money bag, he used to help himself to what was put into it. Boy, talk about artificial light and hiding. Thing is, no one expected Judas Iscariot a betrayal. What does that mean? He was putting on a really good front. But inside, It was really a mess. Again, we don't know. It's so much mystery. Could it have been totally different for Judas Iscariot? If weeks, months earlier, he'd have said, Jesus, there's a lot I don't get here. And maybe months earlier for him to have said, Jesus, I may not be your guy for the money bag because a little bit of greed going on in here. I need some help. Oh, could it have been different? How can new life come if we don't admit we need it? Some of these fasts might push on some areas that need life, and it's a fearful thing to go there, but go there. Open up to someone else, your small group, someone you trust, and most of all, open up to God. Say, God, here's some death that needs your life. And as we do that, we're going to realize we need deep change, not surface change. The third thing we have to put to death is surface solutions. Quick, easy band-aids aren't going to work. Lent isn't about band-aids. Any of you who have children registered in our children's ministry, we're delivered this thing called Easter in a bag. And it's got all these things to do on the days of Lent. And I hope you're doing it. Let me give you a preview of tomorrow. Kids, this is going to be fun. You're going to be asked to take some baking soda and pour vinegar on it. Let me give you a little preview, kids. It's kind of bubble and it's going to do some cool stuff. The idea is that there's stuff going on in us that bubbles that we have to look at. Okay? Now, you can talk with your parents about that tomorrow. I want to talk to the grown-ups now. There's two ways to stop the bubbling and the fizzing. You know the one we most often say? Well, let's just change the vinegar. I'll be fine if the world just changed. Right? John 12, the third story is Palm Sunday story. The next day, the great crowd that had come for the festival heard that Jesus was on his way to Jerusalem. They took palm branches and went out to meet him, shouting, Hosanna! God saves us! That's what that means. Blessed is the one who comes in the name of the Lord. Blessed is the King of Israel. What they're saying is God saves us from the Romans. He changes the vinegar and our lives are going to be fine. That's what they're saying. That's why they were shouting, crucify him at the end of the week. Because the vinegar didn't change. How many of us think if COVID just changes, I'll be okay again? Well, maybe God's got some work to do in us in the midst of it. If those circumstances, if that person just gets their act together, I'll be okay. No. It's time to look at the baking soda. Jesus died for what was going on deep inside. This week, if you're reading, some of the fasts are going to take us inside. We're going to be asked to fast tidy faith, where we mask the questions. Going to be asked to fast easy answers. Say, Jesus, where do you need to come? The anger, the addictions. The doubts. See, Jesus died so that we could come with the reality of who we are and everything at the root of it and let him touch it. Growth is not going to come through easier circumstances. It's going to come through deeper honesty with God and giving him deeper access to our hearts. God, save us now from ourselves, our sin, our fallenness. Oh, he loves us so much. Yeah. He loves us way too much to change the vinegar when he knows we need change inside. What do you need to bring him? Maybe. Even in Edmonton in minus 20, there's something to be learned from a frozen garden. And what we need to learn is this: for life to come, some things have to die. And Lent is about that journey. So what needs to die in your life and mine? From the stories in John, we know that empty ritual, checklist Christianity, that has to die. The lack of authenticity, the hiding of what's real, has to die. And Band-Aid solutions to deep problems needs to die. That the healing in the life of Christ might arise. So God, thank you for Lent. Spring. That yes, we celebrate the new life of the resurrection. But so often we do it with cluttered lives that have no room for the life that you want to birth. God, as we embark on this journey, thank you that you are love. May we not enter it legalistically, seeing you with arms crossed and finger wagging, but instead arms open, inviting, welcoming. Because God, that's who you are. That's why Jesus died, so that arms could be spread open to give us life. So may we, early on in this journey, take our stand and say, here I am, arms open, heart abandoned to the one who gave it all. God, may that be our heart, our cry, our prayer.